The harsh reality is that worldwide, every single year, 1.5 million people die as a result of inadequate access to safe water and sanitation.
Latrines in South African schools are still a big problem there, putting the health and safety of pupils at risk.
That's incorrect. It's really tragic that in 2024 we're still speaking about pit toilets. We've got our very vulnerable provinces, our more rural provinces, like Mpumalanga, like KZN, like Limpopo, and particularly the Eastern Cape, are really struggling with dealing with this still.
How can we expect our learners to learn and to perform if we can't create a safe space for them to go and do a number one and a number two? It's just ridiculous for us to expect that to happen. If your technology does not promote, beyond any doubt, does not promote safety, does not promote dignity, and does not promote sustainability that you can in effect prove, it shouldn't be allowed. Because no longer should we just accept that these fly-by-nights come and install a toilet that lasts for a year or two and then they're never used again.
South Africa has made significant strides in providing basic services to its people. Yet, the reality of unsafe pit toilets remains a glaring issue. No one knows the exact number of schools that rely on these dangerous sanitation facilities, as the numbers quoted by the government to complete by the end of March is the 2018 backlog list. We estimate that there are over 3,000 schools still using unsafe pit toilets. For many children, using the toilets at school, it's not just undignified, it's dangerous. One of the most tragic cases that brought this crisis to light was the death of Michael Komape, a 5-year-old who drowned in a pit toilet in 2014. His story shocked the nation, and along with the death of a 5-year-old, Lumka Mketwa, 4 years later, Oratilwe Dilwane died as a result of his injuries when he fell into a pit toilet in 2016, when he was 5 years old. The pit toilet crisis is more than a sanitation issue. It's a crisis of inequality and human rights. Unsafe toilets disproportionately affect schools in underprivileged areas, creating a barrier to education and perpetuating cycles of poverty. The consequences are dire. Many children, especially girls, miss school because of the lack of privacy or because facilities are unhygienic or unsafe. Hello and welcome to Our Voice, Our Future, powered by Breadline Africa, a podcast where authentic voices tell real stories that inspire change. I'm your host, Arafat Gatabazi. Thank you for joining us for this critical conversation. To unpack this issue further, we are joined by Brian Lewis, director at EnviroSan Sanitation Solutions. EnviroSan is a pioneer company specializing in polymer precision molded water and sanitation systems. Since its founding in 2006, EnviroSan has been at the forefront of delivering environmentally friendly, cost-effective and reliable sanitation solutions. Their mission extends beyond manufacturing. They aim to empower communities through training, capacity building programs, and sustainable innovation. Welcome to Our Voice, Our Future. Thank you for taking time to speak with us.
Thanks for inviting me, Arafat. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. To set the scene for our conversation, can you give us an overview of the current state of sanitation in South African schools and communities?
Sure. So maybe to touch on globally, you know, worldwide, there's still as many as 1.8 billion people worldwide without access to decent, dignified and safe sanitation. In terms of SGD 7, locally in South Africa, that figure is estimated to be closer to about 18 million people that don't have access to safe, dignified, and sustainable sanitation. Mm. On the schools front, it's a little bit of a difficult question to ask because the question is, what does represent a backlog in terms of sanitation? What represents an acceptable means of sanitation at schools and what represents an unacceptable means of sanitation? Some people believe that VIP toilets or ventilated improved pits are unacceptable. Mm. They certainly are accepted in terms of the Department of Basic Education's white papers, which is their gazetted papers as to what are acceptable means of sanitation. Pit latrines are certainly, and it doesn't matter which implementing agent or which government space you talk to, pit latrines are absolutely not acceptable. But again, how many pit latrines represent a school with unacceptable sanitation. And I think that's really where it becomes difficult to be able to give numbers, because it's a moving forecast the entire time. As additional schools are built, even as existing schools continue to operate, and their toilets begin to degrade and ultimately turn into old technology that is redundant and no longer suitable for use, it really is a bit of a moving target. To give you an indication, in terms of access to sanitation, amongst the schools, the harsh reality is that worldwide, every single year, 1.5 million people die as a result of inadequate access to safe water and sanitation. If you take the water aspect out, so you look at just sanitation on its own, roughly about 750,000 people die every single year because of inadequate access to sanitation. Of that, 50% are children under the age of 5. And the majority of that is diarrheal-related diseases. Okay, so diseases that arise like cholera, like typhoid, all those types of diseases, E. coli, intestinal worms, are all as a result of poor sanitation that generally results in diarrhea. And diarrhea for a person that's younger than 5 years old is obviously a lot more severe than people that are older and have stronger immune systems. And that's why as many as 375 to 400,000 children under the age of five die every single year as a result of inadequate access to sanitation.
Obviously, this is like a major problem, and from the numbers that you're mentioning, it's quite big. Have you seen any improvement in solving this crisis?
We certainly have, and I think the landmark case of Michael Kamape and that horrific incident that took place up at a school in Limpopo, whereby young Michael Kamape, going about his daily business, doing something as simple as using a toilet that should have been safe, falling into a pit latrine, and ultimately drowning in fecal matter, was a real landmark case, a tragic, tragic incident. And the same thing happens every single year, right throughout the different provinces. Many of them are not reported. Many of them may not result ultimately in death, but they certainly do result in severe injury. So I think government's SAFE initiative, or Sanitation Appropriate for Education, that's what SAFE stands for, that they launched as far back as August 2018, whereby they committed themselves to eradicate pit toilets and unsafe pit latrines at schools. We have seen a significant decrease in those numbers. At that stage, and again, the numbers vary depending on the reports that you read, but at that stage, 3,836 schools were identified that had unsafe or undignified access to sanitation, so toilets that represent effectively either pit latrines, which were deemed to be not suitable, or schools that had no toilets whatsoever. So schools where the learners would practice open defecation in the bushveld, for example. Since then, those numbers, as reported by the Department of Education, are reportedly down to as little as 236 toilets in terms of that backlog. The real question, Arafat, arises as to, but what is the real backlog? Because many of the schools that we come across on our time on the ground, particularly within the Eastern Cape and KZN and Limpopo, which are the provinces still with the largest backlog in terms of unsafe toilets at schools and pit latrines, we still see hundreds, figures far, far, far beyond the figure reported of 236 toilets in the backlog. And the reason for the discrepancy is sometimes as simple as if there's a single flushing toilet at a school that may have 9 or 10 unsafe pit latrines, that school is not regarded as part of the backlog because it represents access to a flushing toilet. Now, the problem with that, and not to take away or derogate from the fantastic work that government and the implementing agents has done, I mean, to take an initial backlog of 3,800 odd toilets and bring it down to a figure of just over 200 is significant. And government need to be applauded for that. The issue is if you look at the Michael Kamape incident and the toilet that he drowned in, that school too had access to brand new flushing toilets. That school too had access to a form of dignified sanitation, but he didn't drown himself in one of those. He drowned himself in an old pit latrine
mm.
that had never been eradicated.
Yeah.
So very much an argument is to say, but the backlog and schools with access or that still have undignified, unsafe and unsustainable forms of sanitation like pit latrines is far in excess of 236 because all the schools that have been ticked off the list or not even put onto the list in the first place because they have one flushing toilet or two flushing toilets, despite the fact that 90% of their toilets may still be represented by pit latrines, don't fall into government's backlog list.
Like, when we're thinking about this, like this problem has been here for quite some time.
Yeah.
Why do you think it's taken so long for it to be resolved?
Good question. I think there's various aspects to why that would have taken so long. And probably the most significant is budget. To eradicate 3,800 schools with inadequate access to sanitation at an average of 15 to 20 toilets per school, I mean, you can work out exactly how many toilets you're talking about there. Well in excess of 100,000 or close to 100,000 toilets that need to be done, which requires a significant amount of financial resources from government and from the private sector.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it needs to be taken recognition of the fact that the private sector really has come to the party, or certainly has attempted to, in order to help government alleviate these backlogs in sanitation. Many of the blue chip companies that we deal with and the corporates allocate their CSR spending and CSR spending to these types of initiatives because they want to make a difference.
Mm.
And government did, to their credit, make that clear from day one that they were not able to do it by themselves. Number one, they didn't have the financial resources, so they implored the private sector to come on board to help them, which the answer the feedback and the answer in general from corporate was very good, with many, many of the blue chips coming on board to allocate their CSR spend to these types of initiatives. The other major thing is the resource of knowledge and the resource of know-how. Not every single municipality, not every single district municipality, not every single ward, not every single cluster has access to an engineer or has access to someone who knows and is able to implement and roll out these types of sanitation. So that was a real challenge, and that was the reason why DBE had to release a what they call a white paper or gazetted white paper in terms of what acceptable forms of sanitation were allowed in terms of the SAFE initiative, the sanitation appropriate for education, and what technologies were allowed to be put into to eradicate the pit latrines. The third and maybe more or maybe most significant issue was prior to the Michael Kamapi incident was political will. So I think for many, many years and many decades, obviously this the lack of adequate sanitation at these schools is an inherited problem that comes from many, many decades ago. And it was a problem that existed and was present, and there were certainly tragic instances that were reported. But the Michael Kamapi incident really highlighted the plight of these rural schools in particular that lacked access to safe sanitation. And that, through the efforts of Section 27, who, as a result of Michael's untimely and tragic passing away, had to resort to legal actions to enforce the Department of Education to come up with a SAFE initiative to say, well, how will you ensure that what's happened to Michael doesn't happen to someone else? How are you guys, as a department, going to ensure that it doesn't happen? We are, as Section 27, we as a community have had enough, and we now are holding government accountable for how are you going to do it. So let's forget about whether or not you want to. Now you have to, because you've now got a court order instructing you that you need to. And I think there was a significant victory for the rural schools. I think Section 27 were instrumental in achieving that court ruling, and it really spurred government into action that they had to now expedite the rollout of safe, dignified, and sustainable sanitation to eradicate pit latrines at the schools.
From your experience, do you think the community from these underprivileged communities feel heard about this crisis?
Sure. Again, it's not an easy question because there's no one size fits all. I obviously do believe that the schools that have been eradicated, where the pit latrines have been eradicated. Certainly do recognize the input of government. I do also at the same time believe that where government has chosen to put in technologies and systems that are effectively the same as a pit latrine, unfortunately we have seen that take place as well through various of the implementing agents that the Department of Education has taken on to roll out the eradication of these backlogs. Unfortunately, what we have witnessed is that the technologies or systems that have been rolled out by some of these implementing agents is certainly no safer, no more dignified, and no more sustainable than a pit latrine. So our fear is that the cycle will again repeat itself, and I really do believe it will, and I believe it's going to happen shortly, because you can put lipstick on a pig and expect it not to taste like pork. It's always going to taste like pork. We are imploring on government as well as the implementing agents to say our kids deserve rump steak, if I can use that. They don't deserve a pig dressed up as lipstick. They deserve the best, because those are the future leaders of our country, and we need to deliver the best. We can't deliver something that, like a pit latrine, is going to be a safety hazard in 2 years' time, is going to create a cost burden on the school to have to empty, to have to fix, to have to repair, to have to maintain. It's just not a sustainable solution. Why are we repeating a cycle that we should have learned from previously, where the old pit latrines didn't create dignity, they didn't create a sense of ownership or a sense of buy-in from the learners and the teachers who are using these toilets? Why are we delivering at some of the schools, not all of the schools, why are we delivering a similar type solution and expecting a different result? I mean, the definition of madness is continuing a cycle and expecting a different result. And unfortunately, at some of these schools and with some of the implementing agents, that is what we've witnessed. And despite our warnings to some of the implementing agents and to the Department of Education itself, we are now starting to see the end of that cycle. We're now starting to see all of these things that we warned them about starting to become and starting to come to the fore.
I was going to say, is this the lack of learning from the past failures?
It is a lack of learning, whether it's a willingness to listen is also an aspect. Whether it's a willingness to learn from past failures is also an aspect. It's a frustrating thing. It really is. For us to see, and we are not here to advocate that our solution is the one and only, because there are several good solutions. There really are. And we give unbiased opinions. We certainly can't do it by ourselves either. So we fully acknowledge that there are several solutions that meet government standards. And those standards exist for a reason. South African national standards exist for a reason. Standards like the South African Bureau of Standards, SABS Mark, exist for a reason. AGRIMAR exists for a reason. Why is government choosing to ignore all of those? Not always, but in some cases. Why are certain of the implementing agents that government has charged to roll out these systems, why are they choosing to ignore the standards? Why are they choosing to ignore the policies? Why are they choosing to ignore the guidelines? In the full knowledge that the cycle is going to repeat itself. So that has been frustrating for us to watch playing out in the background, but we can't focus on the negative. We can only do our job as sanitation stakeholders in this massive industry and as being one of the leaders in the sanitation industry that we regard ourselves as. We can only alert the necessary stakeholders to that fact. And then we try and focus on the positive. So many of the implementing agents are rolling out safe, dignified, and sustainable solutions. Many of the implementing agents are eradicating pit toilets and pit latrines and unsafe aspects of that. So we do applaud the work that both government does as well as the private sector. Private sector has been instrumental. And when I say private sector, I'm not only referring to the Bidvests and the Unilevers and the Toyotas and other organizations that we as a sanitation sector have worked with to be able to roll out sanitation solutions at these schools. I'm talking about the NGOs. I'm talking about the Water Aids. I'm talking about the UNICEFs, the Breadline Africas of the world, the SOSs. So I think those organizations have not only been instrumental in bringing private funding to be able to allow that process to take place, I think they've also been instrumental from a monitoring and standard setting and policy guideline setting in terms of demanding better from government, in terms of voicing the opinions of the schools and the learners and the teachers. So I think that's been instrumental from that side.
Talking about dignity and unsafe, what are gender specific challenges that girls face when sanitation facilities are not safe?
So there's a multitude of them. If we look at the challenges that not only girls face, but that boys and girls and males and female teachers face, a really tough statistic to try and come to terms with is the fact is that as a result of poor water and sanitation practices at school, as many as 443 million days a year of absent days are lost. Now, that's a monumental cost. 443 million days of absenteeism as a result of poor sanitation practices, poor sanitation facilities. Now, you can imagine that for every investment that is made into providing a safe, dignified, and sustainable sanitation solution would cut those figures, and we've seen it, and we've done the research, and we can maybe get onto that a little bit later in terms of hard and fast statistics.
Mm.
But if we look at boys and girls together, the fact that they don't feel safe to come and use the toilets, and they have to hold in their number ones and their number twos until a break time, and then they run into the bush to go and use, to go and do a number one or a number two.
Mm.
Or they have to hold it all the way till the end of the day until they get to go home and do it. I mean, those are just unsafe practices, unhygienic practices. The fact that those that do use it often get sick as a result of the hygiene issues that exist in these pit latrines. And they often spread, you know, that sickness and those disease and waterborne carrying diseases and all those types of things, they often spread that to other people as well. So it's got a real ripple effect in terms of the days of absenteeism, in terms of malnutrition. And malnutrition has got a variety of other knock-on effects in terms of stunted growth, in terms of slowed or slower cognitive development. Okay, that's a major thing as well. So how can we expect our learners to learn and to perform if we can't create a safe space for them to go and do a number one and a number two? And it's just ridiculous for us to expect that to happen. If we look at the girls in isolation, the real challenge there comes to two things. Number one, their menstrual cycles and the fact that they don't feel comfortable with using toilets during their menstrual cycles. And as a result, often they just won't go to school for those 4 days, you know, in a month. So that obviously affects the absenteeism stats because they are concerned about getting teased.
Yeah.
They're concerned about contracting something or catching something from the pit latrines. Those are all genuine and widespread concerns. The second thing when it comes to really the girls being affected by the sanitation crisis is the fact that they don't feel safe to use the sanitation facilities. So often because of the unbearable stench that comes from these pit latrines, they've got to be built a few hundred meters away from the classroom block. As you can imagine, no one wants to sit in class trying to learn mathematics, trying to learn algebra, and all you can smell is human fecal matter the whole time. So as a result, many of these sanitation facilities are built, you know, 100 meters away, maybe even 200 meters away from the classroom. And as a result, the female or the girls in particular don't feel safe having to walk. Often through bushveld, often great distances, to go and use those sanitation facilities because of the privacy aspects. And there have been some really horrific and horrendous incidents that have taken place because of how far these toilets are located away from a safe space. You know, so the toilets are regarded as a very unsafe space because they're so far away from any supervision, any teachers, any classrooms. And that really does affect children feeling comfortable to use them.
And what role does the community engagement play in ensuring the success of sanitation initiatives?
Yeah, community engagement is at the heart of the entire thing. It really is a prime aspect that needs to be considered.
Mm.
People tend to look after their toilets if they like their toilets. And I think that to an extent has been maybe a flaw on government side where they believe one size fits all. And I can tell you for a fact, something that works in the highlands of KZN Midlands, for example, will not necessarily work in the marshy land of Khayelitsha in the Western Cape, will not necessarily work in Nahoon in the Eastern Cape, will not necessarily work in the Rocky Mountain areas of Matatiel. So we can't just take a blanket approach and say one size fits all. It needs to be a case of what are the needs and requirements of this particular school? Are there things like water available? How reliable is that water? How many days a week is there no water? How much are there backup tanks that we need to put in? By putting in items like leach pits or septic tanks, will that have an environmental aspect? What are the knock-on effects of that? Is the school positioned in a space of growth? So by providing dignified sanitation, are we going to see the enrollment of the school increase? Because then we need to take that into account when we design the system. What are the community, so what are the households around that school, what toilets are they used to using? Are they used to using pit latrines? Or are they used to using flushing toilets? What is the culture that's been created? What are the expectations that are created? So we really collectively need to deliver an appropriate solution on the ground. We need to deliver a solution that the community buy into, because once they buy into it, you can rest assured they are going to look after it and they're going to maintain it properly. And we need to deliver solutions that are all-encompassing in terms of, as far as possible, using the local community in the installation and erection of these toilets. And that's very much what the model needs to be, is that for every one of our workforce that are on the ground, we take two of the local community. Because by the time we leave the project in 2.5-3 weeks, at least some members of the community know how to work with concrete. They know how to work with building tools. They know how to – they've now got a skill that they can apply far beyond the school has been, you know, far beyond once the school has been handed over. They can apply that skill to earn a living. And that's really where we've got to try and move towards, the fact that there's skills transfer, the fact that there's an employment opportunity created, albeit temporary at the actual school, but ongoing thereafter, that they can apply those skills and new trade that they've learned. So I think we need to really make sure that the community are always at the forefront of what solution needs to be delivered.
I know we've been talking a lot about what the government can do. And I know, like, someone like me who's not living in those underprivileged communities, like, I don't think about it. What can individuals and communities take to advocate for safe sanitation?
I mean, you and I, Arafat, are the voice of those people on the ground that sometimes don't have one or sometimes don't have a platform to launch that voice and to launch a plea. It is unacceptable in this day and age, you know, almost 35, 40 years post-democratic South Africa, that we still accept that there are schools out there where we expect the children to defecate in a hole in the ground. It is unacceptable that we expect them to risk their lives every single time that they use a toilet, that there's a risk that they could potentially fall in. Can you imagine a worse death in your life than drowning in your own and other people's fecal matter? There can be no worse way to die. I mean, that to be the last thing that you see before you leave this world, being the bottom of a pit latrine, there can be no worse and less dignified way to die. So we need to be able to voice that. We need to be able to take this plea to the people. We need to take the plea to government to say, government, as much as you've done, there's still more that needs to be done. We accept and we respect the fact that the numbers in terms of the reported backlogs have decreased from 3,800-odd to 236-odd. Fantastic. That's a great achievement. But there's still more. There's still more that can be done. There's still more that needs to be done. And through the invention and some of the initiatives that have been initiated by the Department of Education, which need to be applauded, they need to be applauded for, is, for example, a Vodacom app that we can maybe share with the listeners. Whereby anyone in these rural areas who comes across a school that still has pit latrines is able to take a photo and a GPS coordinate and log that with the Department of Education to say, this one doesn't appear on your list. Here's a photo, here's photographic evidence that it is a need. It's a candidate for a pit eradication initiative. So I think that's where we come in as individuals, as private sector. You know, as a private sector, we all have people that work within our companies. Many of them come from poor rural communities. So we need to go back to them. Guys, where are your children going to school? What are the toilet facilities like there? Is there anything we can do to help? We all have a responsibility. It's not just government's job. It's not just private sector's job. It's everyone's job to try and get to the bottom of this pit latrine crisis.
Can you share any success stories about how addressing the pit toilet crisis has positively impacted the local community?
Sure, Rafat, and you'll have to forgive me because we've done an excess of 300 schools for various stakeholders. I might not always remember the names of the schools, but the visions I never lose. You know, what we do is such an incredibly rewarding job by being able to restore dignity to people and something that you and I might take for granted every single day of our lives. We get up, we use the toilet, we flush it. That's the last thing we ever see. The amount of children that have never even seen, let alone used a flushing toilet. You know, so there's visions I've got from Dindi Primary School in the KZN Midlands, in the Umsunduzi area. Had terrible corrugated iron toilets that were full of snakes that presented sharp edges on the toilets. Dozens of the children still bear the scars today of where they went to go use the toilet and they've cut, that they've cut themselves.
Mm.
The fact that it was so difficult when we were assessing that school to try and navigate yourself around the fecal matter that littered the yard, just because people weren't comfortable to use the toilet, so the children would actually defecate and go number one, number two on the outside of the toilet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you had to be careful that you weren't, when stepping in these landmines, when you were going to take photos and when you were going to do the picture. You know, the smell, that's one thing that can't be described.
Yeah.
I can tell you how bad the odors are. It will never be appreciated or understood until you're actually there, until you actually smell how bad those pit latrines are. And that's why people and the children, they resorted to open defecation, because they just didn't want to sit and not be able to even breathe while they're trying to do a number one or number two. Compare that to 3 weeks later, when for the very first time, a little seven-year-old girl called Lungi, who'd never ever seen a flushing toilet, came into the toilet, pulled the string, flushed with 2 liters of water, and all she did was just a little fist pump in the air, you know, as if she just scored the winning try at the Rugby World Cup, or, you know, she just got 90% for her maths exam. It was unbelievable to see what you and I might, and many others take for granted, and to see the joy in such a simple thing. And it is a simple thing, but it's a simple thing that represents a very real risk if not done correctly. It's a simple thing that is a crisis if it's not done. But it can be addressed. And, you know, that's just one story. There's another story at Chibini Primary School in the Eastern Cape of just the children having to be yanked out of the toilet during the class by their teachers because they just loved using the toilet too much. So they would just sit on the toilet and they would flush and they would sit again and flush and probably not doing it. It was just the sound and the comfort that was now their happy place. I mean, where have you heard of a toilet being a happy place?
Mm.
But that's what we want them to be. We want the children to feel comfortable. We don't necessarily want them to miss school as a result of the toilets. We don't want them to just sit there instead of learning, you know, geography or history or mathematics. But we do want them to feel comfortable to be able to use it, that it's a pleasant experience. Because that's what going to the toilet should be. It should be a pleasant experience. People shouldn't be scared to use it.
Mm.
It, you know, that should be a place of comfort. So there's many, many success stories. There's many. And maybe one of my favorite ones was a school called Deda Primary School, where as a result of setting a benchmark at Deda Primary School of a high level of sanitation, the surrounding community, who were all using pit latrines, then went to the municipality and said, our children are using flushing toilets at the schools, be it low flush toilets, because the toilets only require 2 liters of water to flush, so there's not a lot of water that's needed. And they went to their ward council and said, our children are using the flushing toilets at school. Then they're coming home and they're saying, I'm not using the pit latrine. I'm going back to the school to use the toilet. So as a result, the homeowners then went to the ward council and said, well, why are we not being given a high level of sanitation? We deserve it. Our children deserve it. Yeah. And they've been given it at the schools. We now deserve it. So that had an amazing ripple effect. And that then created a project with government whereby they were given low flush toilets, which in turn created employment. It created skills transfer and all those types of things in that community, resulting in a much happier and more content and now a more dignified solution for the community there. So there's many, and I could sit here all day and tell you about the amazing success stories. There's many, but there are many dire stories that go with those.
Yeah.
Many schools we arrive at where children are, they just look so malnourished. They look beaten, but not because they're physically beaten, but they're mentally and psychologically beaten because of the sanitation facilities that they're forced to use. They have no choice. They have to use a pit latrine. Otherwise, you go to the bush. They're too scared to go to the bush because of the safety aspects. You know, imagine living a life like that.
Yeah. What were some of the key factors to this success stories?
community buy-in and buy-in from the children and the teachers alike. And that's not difficult because if you look at pit latrines, it sets a very low benchmark. So provided that the sanitation system or solution that's being installed there is certified, it is tested and regulated and complies with the norms and standards of DBE, provided it meets all those criteria, people will always be happy with it, certainly happier than using a pit latrine. I think the training, it became very evident how crucial the training aspect is. Again, I've said it that not many of these children had never even seen, let alone used, a flushing toilet. So they then didn't understand what to throw, what they could use to wipe, what they couldn't use to wipe, what they could throw into the toilet and what they couldn't. So that is an important part of the training. And we identified every single one of these schools, at least two, preferably three, what we call sanitation champions, who constantly remind the children. So it'll be a senior pupil at the school or senior members of staff, and they constantly are monitoring how the children are using it, what they're using to wipe, how they're going about using the toilet, ensuring that they use them correctly, and if there are any faults, that they're reported and addressed immediately rather than letting them spiral on, you know, out of control. So.
And what are some of the most promising solutions or technologies available to replace pit toilets in schools, particularly where there's no access to water?
I don't believe there is such a thing as a one-size-fits-all. So I think the specific needs of every single school should be addressed. Ultimately, where there is some water at a school, the South African Human Rights Commission in 2021 did an assessment of the schools because, again, it was claimed that the schools don't have access to water, the schools that don't have access to water. And the findings of that report that was that there's only 18% of the schools countrywide that don't have access to any water. So what we encourage the schools to do is the little excess of water that they do have is to reuse that water. I think one thing that became abundantly clear during the COVID pandemic is that water was a massive necessity at schools to prevent the spread of the virus. It stems to good health and hygiene practices, particularly with regards to hand washing. So all we do is we instruct and we showcase how to reuse any form of water that you've got. So the same water you've used to wash your hands, we can use to flush the toilet. The same water that's been used to prepare meals in the morning for the children at the kitchens can be used to flush the toilet. Rather than just throw them down the drain or throw them on an empty felt, let's rather use them to flush the toilets. We are very against clean, potable water being used to flush toilets because there's such a scarcity of clean, potable water that should be used for drinking and cooking. But if you can have a toilet that only flushes with 2 liters of water, which is a small amount of water, and you can use things like grey water, river water, rain water, or reused water like grey water from washing or bathing, water from cooking or washing hands. If you can use that to flush, then you're ticking everything because you're putting that reused water to good use.
And how scalable or affordable are these solutions?
We see a massive difference in the solutions that get rolled out, not only from technology to technology, that does vary, but we even see it from implementing agent to implementing agent, which begs a lot of questions as to why the same technology being rolled out in the Eastern Cape by a specific implementing agent is 50% more than the same technology being rolled out in the Free State, for example, by a different implementing agent. That's something that we're battling to reconcile with. But ultimately, those implementing agents need to answer for that as to why those discrepancies exist. Roughly, you're looking at, and again, I'm going to say there's no one-size-fits-all, so it depends on what resources are available at a school, what the enrollment is at the school, and then the norms and standards that the school has to abide by. Are we connecting to a septic tank? Are we having to go a conservancy tank because we've got concerns regarding the environmental impact, regarding the discharge? Are we going with a closed circuit system? Are we going with a dry system? You know, but if I had to give you a rough ballpark figure, you're looking at roughly between 40,000 rand to 50,000 rand per toilet, inclusive of everything from the hand wash and hygiene facilities to the back-end solutions, the structures. Are we retrofitting? Are the existing structures of the school of a sound structural integrity that we don't actually have to demolish them, that we can actually just upgrade them and you know, fit them with a better technology, because that obviously represents a cost saving. The really scary thing is that figure that I gave you of 40,000 to 50,000. Yeah. Often the figure often the cost that is rolled out by many of the implementing agents is more than triple that figure.
Yeah.
So we have come across some solutions which are honestly can't understand why they've been rolled out, because they represent nothing better than a VIP or a pit latrine. Yeah. And those systems often cost 120,000 to 150,000 rand per toilet.
Mm.
And the sad reality is they don't last longer than 2 years.
Yeah.
So an approach needs to be changed whereby we look at a life cycle cost. Let's not look at just the upfront cost of what the toilet is. Let's look at a life cycle cost. So if that toilet needs to be emptied or desludged every 5 years, let's look at it over a 5-year period. And then let's equate that back to what is the actual cost at the end of that 5-year period. Because that's the only way that sustainability can work.
And if you had an opportunity to address policymakers directly, what would be your top 3 recommendation to tackle this crisis?
Good question. Personally, as someone who's met Minister Gwagube, I think she's doing a fantastic job. I think she has some real, real challenges in her department, but I personally think she's a fantastic ambassador for the pit eradication campaign. The real challenge is, how do you prioritize what needs to go into a school? So let's look at, for example, now the 3 main costs to the school is infrastructure, of which sanitation would perform one. Classrooms perform or certainly comprise a significant portion of infrastructure. So should we prioritize classrooms or should we prioritize toilets? If there's no classrooms, there's no ways for the children to learn. If there's no toilets, they can't learn effectively. So that's the first conundrum. Secondly, how are the children arriving at these schools? Okay, so scholar transport is a major factor, and it's a major cost to the department. And the third issue is children that are malnourished or don't have sufficient access to sustenance or food, also it's not conducive to their learning. So again, that's why a lot of the rural schools have got food kitchens and feed kitchens that are set up. So you look at the cost of every single one of those. Classrooms and toilets forming part of infrastructure, getting kids to school and feeding them once they're at school so that they can learn. How do you say which is a higher priority? Yeah. So government only has a certain amount of budget. We recognize that. And they need to try and make that budget stretch to as many of those four aspects as possible. My recommendation, as someone who's been in the industry for 20 years in the sanitation industry and has seen a multitude of these technologies, we call them fly-by-night technologies, because they're there 1 year and then they're not there the next year because the technology providers have made their money and they've left. So it's not their concern that the toilets are no longer working. It's not their concern that technology's failed. It's not their concern that they need to be replaced because they're no longer in business and they're not concerned about their legacy. They're not concerned about their reputation. I really believe government needs to go back to the basics. They need to start not only setting policies and guidelines and standards, they need to start enforcing them. So if your technology does not comply with South African national standards, it shouldn't be allowed. If your technology does not carry a mark of approval like SABS or Agrimar, it shouldn't be allowed. If your technology does not promote, beyond any doubt, does not promote safety, does not promote dignity, and does not promote sustainability that you can in effect prove, it shouldn't be allowed. Because no longer should we just accept that these fly-by-nights come and install a toilet that lasts for a year or two and then they're never used again. Yeah. So I really believe that that's the single greatest aspect that government needs to try and address is in terms of policy setting, number one. Number two, enforcing the policies. I think that's a big thing. And I believe it's easy for me to sit here and say, they should enforce the policies. They also have restriction on their resources. But I think that's something that should be prioritized, because otherwise it ends up costing them more in the long term, because they have to carry on installing new facilities rather than just ensuring that they do the job properly the first time.
Yeah.
The third thing I would recommend is that government actually listen to the people on the ground. So many of the people many of the schools will say, we don't want urine diversion. We've seen it at another school. We don't believe it works. We don't believe it's any better than a pit latrine. It still creates many issues with regards to smells, bad odors. It still attracts insects. It is still possible for a child to fall into the opening into the pit contents below. We do not want it. But government chooses often to apply a blanket approach, and they say, well, if you don't want it, then you're getting nothing. And as a result, those technologies never stay long because they're not appreciated. There's no buy-in from the community. The children don't feel safe to use it. So as a result, vandalism exists. As a result, destruction exists. Or sometimes the facilities don't get used at all, and they just end up becoming broom closets or storage yards. So government needs to start listening to the actual users of these technologies.
Cool. Brian, thank you for taking time to speaking to us and educating us on this crisis. We're hoping that our listeners take some positive and get involved in resolving the crisis. Thank you.
Thank you, Arafat. Thank you for your time. Thank you to your listeners. It's not one person's job. It's not one organization's job. So if you are interested in making a difference, there's many different platforms that you can use to make a financial contribution. If it's not a financial contribution, there's many other forms of contribution that you can pick up a spade and come and help us. Yeah. There's many different ways of you getting hold of us and getting in touch with the right people. But at the end of the day, it's all of our job to make a difference. Thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome. Now that we've heard from our guest and explored the issue in depth, the question is, what can we do? Here are some actionable steps. Number one, raise awareness. Share this episode and resource like this with your network. Number two, log a school with pit toilets. Use the Vodacom app, which is simple and quick way to create awareness with DBE of a school in need. Number three, advocate for change. Write to your local representatives and demand accountability and funding for sanitation projects. Number four, support NGOs. Donate to or volunteer with organizations like Breadline Africa or WaterAid South Africa. Number five, stay informed. Educate yourself on these policies and budget related to education and sanitation. Every action matters. Together, we can ensure that no child's safety and dignity are compromised by unsafe sanitation facilities. Thank you for tuning in to Our Voice, Our Future. If you found this episode meaningful, please subscribe to our podcast, leave us a review, and share it with your community. Remember, change begins with us. Until next time.